Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for our podcast. Today on the podcast, I'm so thrilled and honored to have Dr. Alan Widgerow. He's a globally recognized plastic surgeon, a researcher, and an innovator. He specializes in tissue engineering and wound healing and regenerative medicine, and he is amazing. He recently transitioned to working with Elastin. He's chief medical officer of Elastin Skincare, and he has spearheaded many innovations in skincare science. He oversees the Skin Science Center for Innovation, and he also teaches at University of California, Irvine as an adjunct professor and division chief of research. And he's authored over 200 publications and recently has pioneered the idea of adipose-derived stem cells in medical device development. I'm excited to talk to you because you're a specialist in all things collagen, Sculptra, bioregenerative therapy, and peptides. So welcome, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. K. It's a pleasure to be with you. So a lot of things to talk about here.
Yes, for sure. Well, first, can you talk a little bit about your journey of what made you interested in tissue engineering and diving into like how the skin heals and how wounds heal?
Sure. So I'm a plastic surgeon by profession. And I was in private practice for 20 years in South Africa, practiced in this beautiful plastic surgery profession, which encompasses creativity and science at the same time, as you're well aware of. And so that was terrific. But at the background all the time, I was always interested in research, worked with a number of companies like Smith & Nephew, looking at wound healing derivatives, creating different technologies. Then I've developed a scar product. So I've always been interested, firstly, in research and secondly, in product development and new innovations. And certainly over the last few years with this huge revolution of not only AI now, but molecular biology and biomedical engineering and all of these things coming together gives us a unique opportunity to actually move the progress forward.
Well, I'm a super fan of Sculptra and some of the new collagen stimulators out there. Let's just start the conversation with that because I know there has been some controversy in plastic surgery and aesthetics. You're a plastic surgeon. I do facial plastics as well. What are your thoughts on can we use collagen biostimulators and still do facelift surgery?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I have so many comments on this kind of story. Mostly from plastic surgeons that say to me, where is this coming from? Because we've really had no problem in terms of the dissection, in terms of the facelift procedure. And what we're seeing seems to be one particular sort of video that was shown with particulate fragments of Sculptra, but there was really no evidence that this was in fact, firstly, Sculptra. Secondly, we've done so many tests now looking at the absorption process of Sculptra, seeing the way that the lactic acid is actually exposed and then starts breaking down and degrading. But there are a couple of things that are important here. Firstly, the Sculptra actual injection has a surrounding envelope that surrounds the active, which is lactic acid. And there's a little bit of inflammation that causes the dissolution or the dissolving of that outer envelope. But once the inner lactic acid is exposed, you get a huge amount of good regenerative processes taking place, much longer than you would have anticipated from the actual product being there. So what happens is the product is dissolved, but it continues this regenerative process afterwards. And that's the beauty of it. So from a plastic surgery point of view, I know there have been some discussions about can you do a facelift afterwards. And for every, you know, I keep getting remarks from patients, and certainly you can, call this out as well, that there's been no problem in terms of the dissection, that we've had no problem afterwards. That long term, this is not actually creating scar tissue. In fact, just the opposite. It's creating this regenerative tissue that is absolutely fine in terms of dissection and surgery.
I agree. I think that the depth and placement of Sculptra when it's placed in proper planes should not impact deep plane facelift or, you know, even superficial facelifting. And I definitely think there's a time window. Like I would say I would not do a Sculptra treatment if I know I'm going to surgery within 6 months. Like you have to be logical about that kind of thing. Do you think there's a difference in the type of collagen that's created in terms of it being fibrotic or scarred collagen versus youthful collagen?
Definitely. And there's been a lot of discussion about this because there have been some new breakthroughs in that regard. So let me start firstly by saying that, you know, collagen has always been thought of as the sort of equivalent of stimulation and biostimulation, but there are a whole lot of other things going on. You can stimulate collagen by sitting on a wooden park bench and getting a splint in your thigh, and you have a foreign body reaction that stimulates collagen. That's a scar tissue kind of collagen, unfriendly, inflammatory kind of process. That's very different to the process that we're talking about, where we're injecting something into the deep dermis, as you said, and the fibroblasts, which are the cells that produce the collagen and the elastin, are different in the deep dermis to the ones that are in the superficial dermis. They form a different kind of collagen. It's more of a mature collagen. We call it collagen type 1. So we like to actually inject in the deep dermis, get those fibroblasts, produce collagen type 1. That's a regenerative type of storing without too much inflammation, and that creates its thickening, the refreshing of the skin. But at the same time, collagen is not the only peptide or protein that's being stimulated. There's something called elastin, and elastin is one of our favorites because that only really does get stimulated when you've got a regenerative story. In other words, if there's a lot of inflammation, elastin's not going to form. What does elastin do? It's much like its name. It creates elasticity to the skin, gives it skin tone. So not only are you getting the structural support from the collagen, but the elastin is giving you good elasticity and skin tone, which is so important as a combination.
I totally agree. I think it's really important to understand that concept that fibroblast superficial ones behave much more, very much more inflammatory and more like immune defense cells. And the lower level ones are the ones that build and grow that collagen. Now, there have been some thoughts that perhaps Sculpture can stimulate fat genesis. I'd really love to dive into that. That's super interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because through the years, fat has got such a bad rap in terms of, you know, any way that we can, we try and get rid of fat.
Meanwhile, I'm all about keeping the fat.
Exactly. Now, so in fact, there's fat and there's fat. If we look at the unhealthy fat, that's big hypertrophic. In other words, the cells themselves are big and they're overblown in terms of their size. And if that happens, as in diabetes or obesity, these fat cells are unhealthy. They pour out what we call inflammatory mediators that create a whole lot of background inflammation. And that's why in patients with diabetes or long-term major overweight problems, the fat is unhealthy and creates this kind of background inflammation. The converse is if you can produce new, small, healthy fat cells, these produce what we call adipokines. In other words, fat is called adipose tissue. Adipokines are actual mediators or molecules that are produced by these fat cells, one of them called adiponectin, have direct effect on skin health. So we've seen that barrier in terms of the way that the skin functions, in terms of the moisturization, in terms of the actual elasticity that I was talking about, in terms of the collagen and the support structure. If you get healthy fat cells to produce these adipokines, they become very, very positive for skin health. And as you said, one of the new sort of breakthroughs that we've had looking at Sculpture and looking at lactic acid is that we've actually seen that it stimulates these adipogenic pathways. It stimulates the pathways towards small, healthy fat cells that exude this kind of stuff. And, you know, it was a big surprise, and I don't know why it was a big surprise, because when you think about it, Cleopatra used to bathe in sour milk. What is sour milk? Lactic acid. What is our prime sort of active particle in the Sculpture? Lactic acid. So essentially, this has been going back for eons, and everybody used to say Cleopatra had the most beautiful skin. Well, maybe that lactic acid had something to do with the whole story. And it seems to be working through the fat, which is such an important new area of focus.
And is this noticed when it's injected at that dermal fat junction or a slightly deeper depth, or just
It works at that junction. And you know why that's an important question is that everybody thinks the fat is really deep down in the subcutaneous tissue, and it is deeper down, but there also are a whole lot of small fat cells in the dermis. We call this dermal white adipose tissue, which means there are little fat cells that are distributed within the layers of the skin. And they can go two ways. With some damage, those early fat cells, we call them pre-adipocytes because they're not quite fat cells, yes, yet. But with sun damage, they can go on and become fibrosed, and you get scar tissue and atrophy, and the skin starts thinning. But if you take it the other way and you can stimulate those pre-adipocytes to become fat cells, then it becomes healthy. You have the support that you want and the secretion of these healthy mediators that create skin health at the same time.
Interesting. And do you think that nanofat and fat transfer is just essentially producing all these adipokines that are triggering that nice glow people get?
And yes, that, you know, that is part of the equation. There's no question about it. There are a whole lot of what we call progenitor cells. They're like, they have like stem cell effects with that. So with nanofat, as you know, you emulsify them and you put them between syringes and you destroy a whole lot of fat. But what's left is the serum that seems to be full of these progenitor regenerative cells, part of which are stem cells, part of which can be the different agents that we're talking about now.
So we've talked about PLLA or Sculptra and how it can improve skin thickness, also perhaps improving that dermal white fat layer or the fat itself. Do you imagine that it's going to grow fat? Like when I do a Sculptra BBL, I actually feel it creates volume in a manner that's different from just skin and dermal change.
You know, that's really interesting because Sculptra in different places has different effects. So in the face, we don't see a huge amount of volumization. There you see the quality of the skin and the skin health seem to be producing small amounts of fat cells there and small healthy fat cells, probably related to the amount of volume that you're injecting as opposed to the body. When you start doing body, as you start injecting more and more volume, your volumization, in other words, the increased volume is going to be that much more apparent. So I think there are two different effects depending on where you're dealing with this and where and how you're dealing with it. But there's no question about it. You are seeing a little bit of the, and I wouldn't say, you know, people say to me, well, am I going to see lumps and bumps now? No, that's not what happens. You get this gradual increase in volume on the body, whereas in the face, you just get this sort of little bit of plumping, but mainly skin health effects from that aspect.
Yeah. I wonder why the mechanism is different. I actually feel like there is more thickness and fat pad to begin with in the buttock and perhaps injecting that layer of fat inadvertently as well.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. With the different anatomic areas, there's a different reaction to what we do. And also, as I say, we're injecting much greater volumes into those areas, and that probably has an effect of stimulating the fat to a larger degree in terms of the volumization and creating more and more fatty deposits there.
Mm-hmm. And are there any studies coming out regarding tropoelastin and production of elastin? Because, like you said, elastin is such an important molecule. And if Sculptra can actually really amplify that, we should definitely focus on that. Are you guys planning some studies?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. You mentioned that I was chief medical officer of Elastin, but I'm also chief scientific officer of Galderma. So I'm sort of mixing both of those. And when we started with Elastin, one of our huge focus for topical preparations and formulations was stimulating elastin. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but elastin is just such a good regenerative protein. So we look at that a lot. So from the elastin perspective, we looked at that. And then the beauty of elastin joining Galderma is that we have a topical that is regenerative and stimulates collagen and elastin. And with Galderma, we have a number of the fillers that actually work in a similar way. And we've talked about Sculptra now as well. And yes, we are looking at tropoelastin. I look at that all the time. We've got what we call ex vivo models where we take samples from surgeons like yourself and plastic surgeons that are doing facelifts, and we take their facelift samples and we create an ex vivo model out of that, which is unique because it's sun damaged skin. So it's beautiful to be able to actually study that skin, and look at different gene expressions and look at different, technologies that we can use on it to see the effects of it. And certainly we look at elastin, we look at collagen, we look at hyaluronic acid, which is part of the moisturization process. And we look at all elements of what we call the extracellular matrix, which is that part between the cells in the deep dermis that is so important in terms of the actual structure of the skin.
Amazing. I did not mean to overlook saying that. Of course, we chief scientific officer of Galderma is very, it's amazing that you're running this show because you have so much science background. I love that someone who's an innovator and a scientist is actually helping with industry.
Okay. No problem.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I was just very excited to get started, but talking to you. But so one other question I have is, like, you mentioned extracellular matrix, and there's so many theories of aging. How do you feel? What is your theory of aging? Do you think it's DNA mutations that go wrong? Do you think it's extracellular matrix that degrades and doesn't support cells? Like, what's your, picture of a hallmark of aging that might be happening here?
So if we take a step back and look at, let me give you a story of how I started thinking about this when I got involved with skincare per se. And in fact, when I talk to my dermatology colleagues, I say, "What's a plastic surgeon doing talking about skincare?" And I say, "I'm not talking about skincare. I'm going to talk about wound healing because it was one of the areas that I focused on. And I thought, my goodness, the skin is exposed every day to sun damage. We've got wear and tear. We've got the aging you were talking about. And essentially, this is like a chronic wound. When we used to deal with wounds that wouldn't heal and took a long time to heal, this is a similar situation because every day you're exposed to these things that create a kind of wound within your skin. And what were the things that we learned from chronic wounds is that when we started dealing with them and putting on these fancy therapeutics and growth factors and all sorts of things, they disappeared very quickly. Unless you did a couple of things, and one of the main things is preparing the wound before you actually applied it, because the wound, through various time and ages and exposure to toxins, developed and created this background of toxic waste products. And unless you got rid of those first, your actual therapeutic didn't help. So what I'm getting at in a long way here is with the skin, what you need to do first is look at what has accumulated through the years because of this photo damage. What has happened in that extracellular matrix that we talked about that has accumulated there and prevented you from moving forward and kept you in the same place in terms of the skin atrophy and the wrinkles and all this aging story. So when we started, we said, you know what? When we did chronic wounds, we looked at what accumulates in a chronic wound. If we're going to look at skincare, let's see what accumulates in that extracellular matrix from this damage that we see over the years. And the first thing that we discovered was this broken down collagen that happens from sun damage. We found fragmented broken down elastin as well. We found decreased hyaluronic acids. And we found that the whole extracellular matrix was really aged in itself. And that meant that the signaling mechanisms, because the extracellular matrix works where there's signals going on between the cells and the proteins, the cells and the collagen, the cells and the elastin all the time. Why does that happen? Because the cells are the ones that produce the collagen and elastin. So if you get a decrease or a breakdown in collagen and elastin, you want that breakdown to be filtered to the cells to say, make more collagen and elastin. But over the years, as it becomes damaged, that signaling and that conversation, we call it crosstalk between them, becomes affected. So the first thing we've got to do is get rid of the old stuff, get rid of the fragmented collagen, elastin, all of that, and see if you can now stimulate new collagen and elastin. Because as soon as you do that, that conversation, that signaling becomes very clear. That is a huge anti-aging component of the whole story, is can we take the old and replace it with the new? And in chronic wounds, we used to talk about wound bed preparation. I talk about skin bed preparation. So we introduced this whole concept to the skincare fraternity to say, look, we have to actually first start with skin bed preparation. Let's take that extracellular matrix, clear it out. It's like gardening. You've got to get rid of all the weeds, get the soil ready, then you can start planting. So let's get that extracellular matrix clean. Let's stimulate new collagen and elastin. And then you're going to have a beautiful anti-aging profile. How do you do this? We've been using peptides for a long time, and peptides for us are the key to getting things done because they're predictable. We know exactly, the batch is always the same. It's easy to work with. It's synthetic. It's absorbed easily. So there are a huge amount of advantages. And that's why you're seeing on a daily basis, whether it's, the GLP-1s and Ozempics, these are all peptide-based treatments that are, so successful from that perspective.
Interesting. So those are the bad factors that accumulate. Those are the senescence-associated kind of secretory proteins. See, I kind of feel like when Sculptra comes into the picture, it does It does act like a foreign molecule. Your macrophages come and surround, and they do some cleanup. The macrophages are the cleanup cells of the body. So do you think that perhaps they're processing these collagen breakdown products and like cleaning the environment before the fibroblasts kind of launch
Yeah,
their collagen?
it's very interesting. So it does go through a complete transition, and you talked about that. So there are a couple of things. Number one is first we have a kind of foreign body reaction to get rid of that envelope that surrounds the lactic acid. So we call it a carboxymethylcellulose CMC envelope. That creates an inflammatory reaction. The macrophages you talk about come in and they dissolve that outer envelope. Those macrophages are called M1 macrophages. They're inflammatory macrophages. As soon as that's dissolved and the lactic acid starts exposing itself, the M1 change to M2 macrophages. M2 are regenerative macrophages. So the lactic acid starts doing its magic in terms of stimulating collagen and elastin. Your macrophages change their nature. They also help to do that. And when you do that, your fibroblasts also start changing their nature. So you talked about the aged cells. Those are aged, and you mentioned senescent cells. That's a huge anti-aging sort of area to look at. And we're looking at this is, can we reverse that? Can we get rid of the senescent cells? And we're working on that a lot because when you get rid of them, in fact, they create all sorts of problems for their neighbors. When the senescent cells are senescent, it means they're sleeping. It means they don't produce collagen and elastin. But in fact, they're not sleeping at all. They're producing these SASPs that you mentioned, these secretory-associated or senescent-associated secretory phenotypes. These are inflammatory. So once they actually secrete those, it starts affecting the fibroblasts next to them, and it becomes almost like a virus kind of story where these senescent cells really do multiply and become more and more. You can get rid of them and reverse that major anti-aging effect related to that.
They become like bad apples. They're sitting there emitting their fumes and toxins and like kind of making every cell around them lazy and not, active and invigorated. So it's so important to get rid of those. I have this kind of macrophage scavenging theory that I truly feel like when I do sculpture for a patient's face, it brings in these scavenger cells that are gobbling up all the fragments of old, cross-linked hyaluronic acid and the fillers that they've had over the years. And I feel like it gobbles it all up and helps the face to revive and become less of that, hydrophilic kind of puffiness.
Yeah,
So
that's
that's.
why we love combining our restorative skin complex, for example. What it does exactly that in the extracellular matrix. It also stimulates a little bit of fat. And then you do that in between as a maintenance and you have the Sculptra that you're using as a booster. It's a beautiful combination because the sequential events that you've just described is exactly what takes place.
Interesting. I've heard some people talk about worry that PLLA is a polymer and is it a plastic and is it something we have to worry about that we're putting this product in our faces?
No, so the PLLA we use is absolutely natural. It's absorbed and degraded naturally. It's not a plastic. It's not made since it's a natural process and it goes through, if you listen to the scientists that actually produce it, it's a beautiful process that they've looked at. Firstly, in terms of the whole structure of the molecule, because all PLLAs are not made the same. Some are more crystalline than others. Some are more spiky in nature. They form these kind of platelets. Platelets not as in cells, but little plates that sit on top of each other, flat, smooth plates, elicit very little inflammatory reactions, so they're different from that process. And then they go through this degradation process, which is an absolutely natural process. So no plastics, no synthetics. This, people are getting mixed messages from that. There's nothing to do with plastics or synthetics.
Yes, and how about PDLA? I was recently in Asia and Tokyo and people in Korea, everywhere there's a big explosion of a product called PDLA, the reverse isomer PLLA on the
Yeah.
market. What are your thoughts on that? I heard some good things, like some of the Asian faculty felt that it was less inflammatory, but they also said some negative things, like it did not produce as much collagen stimulation, it was more subtle.
And this is the problem, is that at this stage of the game, you have such mixed and varying reports on these. The beauty of PLLA and Sculptra PLLA is it's 25 years in the making. There has been so much research, and in the beginning there were problems. The dilution was not great. If as soon as you didn't dilute it enough, there were problems with nodules and inflammation, all sorts. That has been completely now and negated. So with the right dilutions now, putting it in with the right mixture, using the right structural stories, using the right era that it comes from, we have the major advantage of having 25 years experience with it. And that's why when people say to me, oh my goodness, you're saying we're going to stimulate fat, now I'm going to get lumps and bumps. I say, guys, you've been injecting this for 25 years. Have you seen lumps and bumps? No. Well, you're not going to see it now. But what we have uncovered is a mechanism of action where you're creating small, healthy fat cells. And that's why your skin is looking so good afterwards. We're finding a whole new reason for it. So, you know, there are different PLLAs, there are different PDLAs, there are a whole lot of different things, but we sort of keep going back to, listen, we've looked at this over 25 years. We know exactly how ours behaves, and that becomes a major advantage to it.
Yeah, definitely Sculptra has a track record. And I say the same thing with facelifts. Like, I've been doing surgery for 25 years. Why is it just this last 1 year that surgeons have spoke up? Well, it's a social media phenomenon, and it's just like to draw attention.
And that's such a great point, because this is what we come back to all the time. You know, what's new suddenly? What have you sort of seen? And it comes down to one picture that somebody saw somewhere, which is questionable to start with.
Yeah, that's why science is so important here, and to bring like real evidence-based medicine. And if there is something to say, there better be some evidence about it. But I think the concept of skin priming, or as you said, building, you know, the wound bed and the skin foundation is so important. Do you foresee products like collagen stimulators being mixed with, you know, amino acids, peptides, PC, we've heard of polynucleotides on the market, DNA and sperm, you know, the sample facial?
You know, we've got to differentiate, and you've just hit the nail on the head, that there's science, validating science, that is so important in the long term, that is balanced with fad and what is popular now and what is sounding like it's wonderful. It's so funny because everybody's talking about peptides now. We've been using peptides forever and ever, you know, and essentially now I think people are starting to recognize that, well, okay, there's so little risk involved. It has so many upsides that, you know, when we're talking biologics, so things like cells and growth factors and different biologics that you use, you're not quite sure if every single batch is going to be the same. In fact, it's almost impossible to have every batch being the same. You're not sure when you need high levels, when you need low levels. You're not sure what other side effects it's going to have. With peptides, it's just so much more predictable. You've got a molecular weight that is small. The growth factors and things, huge molecular weight. So you can't get them through the skin very easily. With peptides that we use, small molecular weight, you can get them through the skin very easily. You don't need any specialized delivery mechanisms. We do use them in certain situations. If we want to get it down the hair follicle and get it right down very quickly, there are delivery mechanisms. But most of the time, you don't need anything special because the molecular weight is small and gets in there. So there are major advantages to it. And also from a safety profile perspective, it's predictable. We've done all the work with gene expressions and in vitros and ex vivos and clinical trials and biopsies and all sorts of validation steps to sort of show that, you know, they're very good. So when you say amino acids, peptides are made up of amino acids, and it depends. I've actually designed one or two peptides. We have one that I've designed that really creates beautiful hyaluronic acid, stimulates it there. I'm working on another one now. But the amino acid makeup of them are really important. Peptides are really important. So they're here to stay. You know, this is going to be something where small molecules are also developed out of different peptides as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They're here to stay, and they're such a good adjunct for before any kind of intervention and after to put on your great skincare. Do you foresee Sculptra being mixed with exosomes or PDRN or, you know, peptides themselves?
Yeah, it's difficult to say being mixed on whether you use them at the same time. So I love synergy. I don't necessarily want to mix it in the same sort of combination. What I do like to do is say, okay, Sculptra is your booster. Now, what are you going to use for everyday maintenance? Because when you use a topical on your skin, you get an incremental improvement every day. It's a small, but steady improvement because it's absorbed every day and it's working on a long-term basis, as opposed to your injection, which is the booster story. You put them together, we have synergy. We have long-term maintenance, short-term boosting. That's terrific. rather than trying to mix it all in one injection and do a once off. So this synergy between the maintenance and the boosting, I think, is a very nice one. We, of course, do it all the time with devices where we do a procedure and we say, okay, we've done this laser or whatever it is now. We've boosted, we've denatured collagen, we've boosted this new collagen formation. But in between, is there something we can use not only for the healing, which we do as well? We help to get you healed from the procedure, but then also for the maintenance story. Can we improve and stimulate the collagen and the elastin and all these regenerative processes in between your procedure? So that's the synergy that I like.
Now, talk a little bit about the TriHex technology and the peptides that are in elastin skincare. How did you come up with that, and exactly what does TriHex as a peptide do?
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, the story that I told you earlier on with the wound healing. This is really where it all started, is we said, okay, we've defined that there are these things, accumulates waste products accumulating in the extracellular matrix. Can we get rid of them and stimulate new products? And that's where our peptide choice came in. So we first started looking at this tripeptide one, which is a copper peptide, which is well recognized for a long time. But one of the things we discovered that hadn't been talked about before is that it's an enzyme that comes out from the tripeptide, which is called MMP2, basically clears out that extracellular matrix of the fragmented collagen and elastin, and then stimulates new collagen and elastin. Then we have a hexapeptide 12 that is in there that stimulates new elastin, and there's an elastin binding protein. So we started the whole story by combining these two, tripeptide 1 and hexapeptide 12, which had never been done in that combination before, and there is the TriHex technology that we started. But that was just the backbone of the peptides that we used. Then we added different things like phosphatidylserine and oleoroopine, things that would decrease inflammation, that would decrease accumulation of something else that we haven't talked about, and that's glycation end products related to circulating blood sugar. We know sugar is such a huge problem, and that's why these GLP-1s are doing well, because they seem to be controlling sugar. So sugar also creates a whole lot of waste products in the skin. So if we've got something that we can do to decrease the amount of sugar, glycation end products, the end products that are created from sugar. So you'll see there's a common theme here. In fact, what I say is our formulations really revolve around waste management. One of the things that we do is we get rid of the old, we recycle it, we replace it with new, and that has incredible effects on the skin if you can do that. And that's really what it is in a nutshell, TriHex technology.
Amazing. So it's acting like environmental garbage men cleaning up the senescent skin.
Yeah, we've got a statement. We recycle the matrix, and that's really one of our, you know, areas and one of the areas we're known for.
Yeah. I do think that's going to be a big innovation, is like the concept of aging being cleaning up the environment that the cells live in. Like, honestly,
like a microcosm. You're absolutely right. You know, we live in this and we talk about it all the time about our environment, but what about the environment that we've created for those cells related to that outside environment? And is there something we can do to improve the inside environment? And that's what we're doing.
Exactly. I noticed that after collagen stimulator treatments, people look, as we know, there's a sculpture glow that lasts, you know, you see it around 6 weeks. It really peaks and then falls. And then it's almost like that environment then gradually goes back to its old environment, although there may be new collagen there. Is there a reason there's such a temporal, you know, change in terms of collagen stem? We know that where the peaks are for where collagen grows, but I'm just curious as to why we get this glow. And, you know, it seems like with any product, you get a little bit of glow, even if you use a hyaluronic gel filler. Why is that so?
So that is a temporary response to a filler from the volumization. We call it mechanotransduction. What does that mean? It means that there's actual volume that stretches the fibroblast. And if your fibroblast is reasonably healthy, and the fibroblast is the cell, as we said, that produces collagen and elastin and hyaluronic acid, and if you stretch them, they become spindle-shaped, and spindle-shaped fibroblasts, stretch fibroblasts, are very good at producing collagen, elastin, and these regenerative stories. So from that volume and the stretching of the fibroblast, you're probably getting that initial glow from that. And then as the volume decreases, you know, the fibroblast reverts to its other shape. If it gets really bad with a fibroblast where it's not being stimulated at all, it becomes round. And the round fibroblast is a senescent fibroblast that we talked about before. So you want to try and produce the stretched spindle-shaped fibroblast as much as possible. And with the volumization that you're doing with a filler, and that's why you see it with Restylane, you see it with the others, is you're creating that mechanotransduction. Once that is over and you get the dissolving of the outer envelope and down the line the lactic acid is exposed, you get that second sort of wave of new regeneration that's taking place. And that's a much longer term story. You get structural changes. You get the changes of skin health down the line. But that initial flow is probably just the stretching of that fibroblast.
Interesting. Okay, that makes me think I need to do face yoga. Stretching, lymphatic massage and face yoga.
It's sort of got to be constant, you know, a stretching of that fibroblast. It can't be on a small sort of basis, but you could be right.
And how can we innovate that? Because it's kind of sad when your Sculptra Glow goes or your, between. Like, I really wish there was a way to keep that kind of triggered and turned on, but I think you're right. The volume goes down and then what?
But you see, Kay, this is where I like the combination, because we get that glow from the topicals as well.
Yeah.
And the topicals can create that maintenance of the glow in between. You have the boosting and the two work very nicely together.
Right. I've been using Sculptra for treating my patients who are in rapid weight loss, the GLP-1s and Ozempic face, and for avoidance of Ozempic face. I've had really great results with that so far. What are your thoughts on how that mechanism might be? Is it holding collagen and foundation, or is it building some adipogenesis?
Yeah, that's where the timing could not be better, because now suddenly we discover this adipogenic pathway, and we discovered it just as GLP was coming out. I mean, there was no sort of, we didn't plan on doing this. The two happened simultaneously, and we thought, oh my goodness, this is just the perfect remedy, because we're losing the, you know, this fatty tissue. We're losing the effects of it. We know that the skin, the so-called Ozempic face, looks a little atrophied. The skin is looking a bit sad. You look a little aged. Okay, can we actually boost this and reverse that process? And it seems to be, as you just said, adipogenic pathways rather than anything else. And because Sculptra has this unique sort of mode of action, it's just the perfect one to use. That said, again, now back to the topical, restorative skin complex in the elastin product also has stimulants for the adipogenic pathway. So we've got things that convert pre-adipocytes to adipocytes. So maintenance, boosting in GLP-1 patients makes perfect sense as well.
Yeah, for me, I put all my patients on this regimen now where I'm building their facial foundation with Sculptra throughout their treatment. Almost every 10 pounds, I'll bring them for another session, because I've seen beautiful results with face maintenance and the volume.
Then in between restorative skin complex, you'll see how the skin looks.
Even better.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on comparing skin nectar to products that are out there like exosomes and, you know, topical products created by Wharton's jelly or other secretome type products?
Yeah. You know, in Wharton's jelly are umbilical with rice stem cells and things like that. And again, we get back to this biologic story. There are a couple of things. Number one is, can you define exactly what you want to achieve? So I've explained or gone through a whole lot of descriptions to you about extracellular matrix remodeling, where I want it to work, how I want to get rid of the waste products, stimulate new product formation. You know, when we talk about exosomes and biologics, there is a lack of clarity as to what they are actually achieving. What do you want to achieve with this? Because there are a lot of areas. Exosomes are very complex. Inside an exosome, that's inside, outside the other things as well, but inside an exosome, you've got DNA, RNA, lipids, proteins. You've got a whole lot of different types of RNA going on in there. Does one know exactly what you have in that cargo and what it's going to do? So there's a bit of unknown related to that. I talked about the batch exposure, the problems with, are you getting the same each time from there? Is it going to be predictable? What are the outcomes? Are there any unexpected outcomes that can happen? Well, we don't know what's inside the cargo, so how do we know whether it's going to happen or not? So I think there's a huge amount of work. There are a lot of good things about exosomes, but I think that in terms of skincare, there's so many predictable agents that you can use that will work well and extremely well over the years that we've researched and validated whereas exosomes have not gone through that validated process. So I sort of talk about, when I look at exosomes, I talk about three things that I find problematic. Firstly, that it's untargeted. We're not going to the extracellular matrix or knowing where it's going. We haven't actually talked about it. It's unvalidated in terms of there's just a huge amount of studies that still need to be done as to what are you trying to achieve with these exosomes and what are they actually doing. And then thirdly, it's unpredictable in nature. How do you know, if you don't know what the cargo is that the exosomes are carrying, how do you know exactly what it's going to do? So I think from those areas there, although I'm involved with science and involved in a lot of areas, I love it for eyes. I love the exosomes for the treatment for eye disease, things like that. And I think for skin diseases, you're taking something that is loaded with a whole lot of potentially active things that or active areas that haven't been exposed yet and taking a bit of a chance in terms of the skin structure.
No, I think I would agree. How do you feel about polynucleotides and PDRN and these salmon sperm fragments?
It's interesting. Salmon sperm and polynucleotides, and I know when I was in the UK, wildly popular there. They love using it there. But again, what are we achieving? What's the definition here? Because I get so many anecdotal reports where they say to me, I promise you the results are fantastic. That doesn't help me. Tell me what it's doing, when it's doing it. These are fragments of DNA that they're using. These are polynucleotides, in other words, segments of nucleic acids that are in our DNA. So it leaves us exposed to a whole lot of areas that are working. I can tell you from a practical perspective, when I've spoken to plastic surgeons and derms there, they say they're using polynucleotides for its short-term effect because they think it's helping short-term in terms of the advantages of skin health that we talked about. But they're using Sculptra still in the long term because that gives you the longer lasting effects. What exactly it's doing short term, we still have to define. Whether this is going to be a fad and will continue, I don't know yet. Whether there's just not enough good science to show what it's doing and whether it's going to actually, last or whether this is just something you apply, it goes quickly. Okay, let's do it again and again and again.
Is Galderma headed towards more scientific research in terms of, I know you've done a deep dive into gene ontology and looking at what genes are turned on during the bioregenerative process. What are your thoughts on hopefully driving molecular science and cellular renewal at the molecular level?
Right. So, we do this. So from elastin with the topical to Sculptra to the fillers, and even now I'm doing a little bit with Cetaphil as well, is that essentially we're treating this almost like pharma now. We're doing such deep validation in terms of gene expressions, in vitros, ex vivos, all sorts of studies there. And those are all in a molecular basis. So molecular biology, in fact, one of my chief scientists at UCI is a PhD in molecular biology and genetics, and she's a part-time consultant at Elastin and at Galderma. So we're using this all the time. You talked about the gene ontology, the secretomes, the reactomes, the string analysis. There are a whole lot of different things that we do related to genes and making sure that we actually get exactly down to the molecular level to find out how these are working, where they're working, how long it works for, is it predictable. So all the things that I mentioned that were a little unknown in terms of the other biologics, here we want to make it as validated and known as possible.
I think that's so important. I really feel like we haven't done enough research in aesthetics into the mechanism of action and exactly what you said, how the genes are turned on. It's going to help unravel at some level this whole puzzle of aging.
And that's why I love the peptides, because we really have dug down deep there. We've found exactly where it works. We've defined the mechanism of action. We've defined when it's going to work, exactly where in the skin it works. So all of those are now nicely worked out and defined. And that's why I get so irritated when somebody comes in and says, oh, I promise you it works fantastically. You can't believe how good my skin looks. Not good enough anymore. Now, we've got to actually get down and say, this is where it's working. This is how it's working. And we validated that and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I think you're so fortunate to be at companies that have a lot of revenue. What are these new companies to do? The FDA guidelines are very strict these days. So many people are doing topical cosmeceuticals because they don't want to do these expensive studies that look at mechanism. What are your thoughts on how the industry is changing with that?
Well, I think it is changing, but you know, you don't necessarily, I just mentioned to you now that we get these samples from facelifts and we do ex vivos. We do the most sophisticated testing and it doesn't have to cost you a fortune. So I think that if you apply, you know, good principles to it and you don't have to necessarily go and outsource to private companies that where it's going to cost you a fortune, but if you have some in-house research that you're doing that you can manage and that you can do at reasonable costs. We churn out every month the two or three studies that we're doing at a molecular level that you talked about that are not necessarily costing a fortune, but are creating this library of data for us that is so important. And yeah. You know, Fleming Orskoff, our CEO of Galderma, talks about innovation. Every second word coming out of his mouth relates to innovation. And it's one of the things that attracted me when we had the acquisition, Lasten and Galderma. I just thought we're on the same wavelength here. Innovation is so important to it. And it has to be in this day and age. You can't, you know, you use slogans and marketing alone for the science that needs to be actually developed and portrayed.
Very true. Such a good point that there are inexpensive. I mean, you can run experiments if you really want to. You can. Like, people are holding back because of wanting to drive dollars towards advertising and marketing and not towards science, really.
No, there's a balance, and we do both.
Can you discuss how regenerative medicine is kind of bridging the gap between surgical and non-surgical? Because I find that fascinating, and I truly think that we're going to be able to change how we age so that hopefully we don't need as much surgery. But what are your thoughts on that whole focus of regenerative aesthetics?
You know, it's very important. So you were talking, and coming from a plastic surgery background, you'll know, and you have the same sinking feeling when somebody walks through the door with this leather face that has been beaten by the sun for years and years, and they say, "I want a facelift." And you look at this and you think, this skin's not even going to budge. You know, I'll get a little bit of an improvement, but it's going to go straight back. It's going to be murder to do. If we start early on these patients, they won't be walking through the door with this leather face and the whole business. This is a combination story. You want to maintain it. You want to do your fillers. You want to do your topicals. You want to do everything that is going to stimulate good, healthy skin. And with that, you're going to get a different caliber of patients that's going to come for surgery. And that surgery is going to be that much better in terms of their outcomes as well. So it works as such a beautiful balancing act that if we sort of do this regenerative medicine, topical therapy, injectable therapy, together with surgery, together with even some of the non-surgical devices that we can use, that's all going to be related to the synergy I was talking about. And I think that is the way to true aesthetic development. And that is using non-surgical devices, using topical devices, using injectable, using invasive surgery where it's needed, facelift surgery, etc., and balancing it all so that you get the best ultimate result. And I think that the next generation and the next couple of generations are getting there. They're starting earlier. They're looking after their skin earlier. You know, they're not damaging in the sun like we used to do in the old days. They're having a lot more respect for it. And I think that is going to create a different kind of aging through the years that we're going to see now.
Very true. And then one last question, and from your perspective, are there, you know, trends that you can see or innovations coming down the pipeline for either for Galderma or Elastin or in general?
No question about it. It's a very exciting time. So, you know, everybody talks about AI and AI, but AI is going to make a huge difference, because if you think about how we sort of did drug discovery in the old days and sort of looked at mimetics, in other words, things that acted the same way as another drug, and how do we find this, and how do we find something with a similar chemical formulation, and how do you find something that's going to behave the same? Well, your answer with AI is in a couple of minutes what we used to take 2 or 3 years to explore there. So that's definitely one of the things that's going to help for drug discovery, even for some of the formulations that we use and some of the synthetics that you put together and some of the peptides. AI will help there as well. But then, as I said before, you've got the perfect storm of molecular biology. You've got the biomedical engineering. It's a whole new area in terms of looking at structures and different, you know, elements that we can use here. So I think there's a lot of hope related to it. You know, you get a product like the GLP-1s that have come out of the left field and suddenly transform the whole probably the whole health industry. And I know there are, you know, one or two negative reports, but really controlling sugar is everything. It's related to so many different health processes. So I think this is something that's here to stay. And I think we'll see more and more of these sort of things that maintain and get and improve and change the way that we actually live and age.
I totally agree with you, Alan. I couldn't be more excited about the things that are coming up, and so grateful that we have this chance to talk. I know my audience is going to love hearing the words directly from, you know, the scientist who's in charge. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you on social or through your company websites?
Yeah, I think it's probably best to go through the company website. Of course, I do have, you know, Instagram, things like that, but probably best to look at the Galderma website and you can find out more about all the products that we use. And also, of course, the Elastin Skincare website, which always has our products that I'm still developing and very excited about. We've got things coming in the pipeline that are also completely new and different and exciting from that perspective.
Amazing. I want to come visit you in the lab down in Carlsbad. I'm going to come over to headquarters and say hi.
Exactly. No problem. Good to be with you. Okay.
Yes. Well, that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same as beautybydrk.com. And you can check out our Elastin products there. I love their TriHex technology. And truly important to do things in between what we do in the office intervention. So I love a good skincare, and peptides are so important. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.